Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Our nightly recap of training camp today, of course, is Wednesday. It's day 8 of training camp out at Latrobe. My co-host David Todd is working for ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio today. So I got my good buddy Mark Cabali from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review with me tonight. You can follow Mark on Twitter at @MarkCabali_Trib. And the only reason you're probably not following him on Twitter is because either you're not on Twitter or you don't know how to work Twitter. There's no reason to otherwise. Mark, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Mark, it's I purposely waited about 8 days or so because we know Chris Rainey's fast. We know some of these other questions that people like to ask and all like that. I wanted to go more into the back end of kind of the roster a little bit, some of the battles here. First of all, the big news today, of course, Ben Roethlisberger announcing that, slight tear of the rotator cuff in his throwing arm. I believe you even had to stake out Ben the last 90 minutes or so outside the cafeteria to get a version for your paper for it. That's a non-issue, right? Anything you can fill us in on that?
He totally disregarded it. He said it happened last year in the home game against Baltimore. He cited some sort of weird horizontal tear compared to a vertical tear that isn't as bad. He totally downplays. There's nothing wrong with him. He throws the ball off the goalpost to start practice all day. Today, after practice, he went through two or three throwing drills. I asked Mike Tomlin if he's been limited at all in throwing during camp, and he said, no, it's really a non-issue. It's some kind of technical mumbo-jumbo where officially something may be torn, but it doesn't affect his play whatsoever. So we had to do some staking out. His lovely wife was with him, and he denied us at first, but I think his wife got it into his ear while they were eating. He was more than happy to talk to us afterwards. So maybe it is his wife that's setting him straight, because he came up and talked to us for about 4 minutes afterwards and nothing but a nice gentleman. So got to give him credit on that, though.
So this is just Ben being Ben then, right?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with him. I mean, you know how you have to figure when Ben blows his nose is a big story. So if he comes out and says, I have a torn rotator cuff, myself, I have a torn rotator cuff right now, and I can't lift my arm above my head. So when you apply that to a professional quarterback, it makes you wonder what the heck's going on. So it was a valid question, but apparently there's different types of rotator cuff tears. He figured it was no big deal, and he was 8 years in the league. This being his 9th year, that he would realize, if he stubbed his toe in Pittsburgh, it's a big deal. So I guess he hasn't learned yet, Dave.
I guess not. What about his comments he made about Mike Wallace thinking that he's going to be in over the next couple of days? He seems to be in contact with Mike, and evidently offered to fly down to Louisiana when he arrived to camp to go talk to him, and that request evidently was denied. You think Mike's coming in the next couple of days?
I really don't believe so, Dave. What I would circle right now, and obviously this is just conjecture on my part, I don't know anything. It just seems like common sense, especially what happened in Indianapolis over the weekend when two guys were out for the season on non-contract drills. The smartest thing I would circle right now to try to guess when he would be in would be right around week one of the season. Take all this off-season activity out of the equation of him getting hurt, jump in, get his money, get ready, have a decent year, move on next year. If he doesn't show up week one, then we know he'll be probably showing up November 13th if he had an ounce of smarts in his brain. So that's just me speculating, but I really believe right now the date we have to look for is that, right after the last cut down day, right around there, would probably be a smart time for him to come in.
Yeah, I've written about this ad nauseum and all every angle there is. Mike really doesn't have any ground to stand on other than risking injury, I would think, at this point. You know, I know we differ in an opinion on this. I still think they sign him to a long-term deal. I think he'll report. In my guess, and this is total speculation, I've made that clear, that I think he reports over the next week or so, hopefully, and gets a long-term deal. But we'll see how that plays out. On to training camp stuff here. One of the battles is the fourth defensive end spot, I think, one of the good battles, and Al Woods versus Corbin Bryant. Corbin Bryant still has practice squad eligibility. Al Woods, of course, doesn't. Woods, of course, was claimed off waivers last year from the Seattle Seahawks. How's that battle going? Because it seems like we're hearing Al Woods' name a lot more than Corbin Bryant, and I think you even tweeted something about Woods getting the best of DeCastro again today.
Yeah, you got him a couple times again today, Al Woods. That's funny you should bring up that battle there, because not too many people know about Corbin Bryant or Al Woods. And today during one-on-one drills, who are the two people that stood out on the defense? Al Woods and Corbin Bryant. Myself, I think Corbin Bryant's having one heck of a camp so far. He's dominated David DeCastro a couple times. He's dominated other people as well. He's playing really well, which is kind of surprising me. He was an undrafted guy last year. They brought him maybe a couple days after camp started. So they like him, and you would think maybe if this goes neck and neck down the road, maybe that practice squad eligibility does come into play and who wins that battle. But right now, that is a battle that those two are really bringing their A game right now and looking really good. But also, when I see them play here, I do have to put in perspective a little bit. They're going against typically third-string type of offensive linemen. Other than DeCastro, you see a lot of them going against maybe a Cal Jolly or maybe somebody of that caliber. So you have to put that in the perspective of they're dominating what type of people as well.
DeCastro and Adams, not overly glowing reports yet, but both these guys missed a lot of the OTAs and you know, because of the school requirements and all like that. And I think you even tweeted, too, that Sean Kugler got into both of those guys pretty good today. What's your assessment on the two young offensive linemen after a week now of training camp?
They're rookies. That's about it. I mean, they will – look like garbage for two or three plays. You're thinking this guy's a first round pick. Then he'll make a nice splash play. And you're like, yeah, he can play. He's a player. So what I see from those two guys right now, and it's expected, is extreme inconsistency. And that's just how it's been for the first 6-7 days. They look good. They don't look good. That's expected. And I talked to Sean Kugler the other day, and he says, you know, it gets frustrating at times, but you have to realize they're rookies. As long as they keep learning from their mistakes and not make them again and keep getting better, he can handle with them. But he also said something else that was kind of interesting to me is he's basically not anointing anybody to start. He says whoever deserves to start is going to start. So, be honest with you, another guy who's having a pretty darn good camp with us so far is Ramon Foster. And the reason why people probably don't like Ramon Foster is not a flashy guy at all, but he gets the job done. He absolutely stonewalled Ziggy Hood today twice, back-to-back, and it looked like it was effortless because the guy just knows how to position his body. He's going to give David DeCastro all he can handle for this job, and Steeler fans out there, just don't count this guy out yet. I'm starting over David DeCastro for at least, you know, maybe 4, 5, 6 games this season because Ramon Foster is that good right now, and David DeCastro has a long way to go.
And even Alan Faneca, he didn't start immediately as a rookie. When you go back and look at some of those, I think you even sent me some of those lists of week one starting linemen over the seasons and all like that. And a lot of people forget as good of a offensive lineman, guard that Faneca became, and a certain Hall of Famer. This is a guy that did not start week one of the regular season.
Hey, and let's not kid ourselves here either. In this day and age of the NFL, rookies have to play quicker than ever. So David DeCastro is going to give every opportunity, along with Mike Adams, to be a successful draft class, they got to get on the field extremely quick. But the Steelers have to balance with if are they ready to be able to perform yet, or they're going to hurt the team, or if somebody like Ramon Foster, Max Starks is better for that. But that's not carousel. These guys have to get on the field for this draft class to be successful. And they have to get on there early. I mean, maybe a little bit less with the Castro because he's a four-year guy with a fifth-year option, but a guy like Adams, man, he's going to have to get on the field soon because before you know it, he's a restricted free agent. He's a free agent, and he could be going somewhere else. So it's a different landscape right now.
Absolutely. That's a good point with these guys with the four-year contracts now. And like you said, DeCastro has the fifth-year option, but Adams doesn't. So the rush to get these guys up to speed quicker is definitely on. And it's easier to do it on offensive line than it is, say, the Steelers' defense there. The wide receiver position, that fifth, that number five spot there, we already know, of course, if Mike Wallace shows up, we know who our starting four are. But it doesn't seem like anybody's poking their head out for that number five spot. Most of what I read is Tony Clemens with some drops. I hear Derek Williams getting some looks with the second team starting unit. Marquise Mays makes a few good catches right here. How would you assess? Quantify that battle right now for that fifth wide receiver spot?
I'll say wide open. You're exactly right. Nobody's really distinguished themselves whatsoever. You'll see somebody like David Galrath make a nice catch one day, then he disappears for 4 days. You see a guy like Marquise Mays shining for a day or so, then he's gone. Derek Williams makes a play, then he's gone. I saw Tony Clemens make a play today, and it makes you turn your head and say, hey, that guy got some talent. Right now, these guys, I think, are just filling themselves out right now because there's really nothing there. I mean, I think Jimmy Young's another one that made a nice play once or twice. But once again, they're not putting multiple plays together where at least where I can say, hey, this guy's looking pretty good or keep your eyes on him. I mean, if I was, you know, put a gun to my head and say who's played the best or has the most potential right now, I would say maybe a Marquise Mays, but he's a very, very, very tiny guy. And I don't know if they would want to keep a tiny receiver to go along with a Chris Rainey who would probably play a similar type of position. So that might hurt him right off the bat. But they had him back to Marquise Mays returning kicks today a little bit. So it's wide open. I mean, if Mike Wallace doesn't come in and say he does sit out 13 games or 10 games, then that's going to really open up because now you're looking for two receivers in that spot. And they don't even have a fifth receiver right now, let alone a fourth.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. That was my next question, too. If indeed it got to that point with Mike Wallace, could we see somebody? I mean, the name that's always floated out there right now, I hate to say it, it's Plaxico Burress. Right. Has that ship sailed with Plaxico, or could you see a guy that would come in on a one-year kind of a qualifying contract before the start of the season? Of course, they would have to guarantee that, I would think, prior to the start of the season to kind of a body to fill in that role.
I think they're going to not only be assured that Mike Wallace isn't, or they're going to believe that Mike Wallace is going to sit out until week 10, but I think somebody else is going to have to get injured for them to even be able to consider a Plaxico Burress, because I just don't think he's going to fit in right now with this offense and in the long run. I mean, if Emmanuel Sanders stays healthy, he could be a guy that has Antonio Brown type of a year this year than last year. Let's think about it. Emmanuel Sanders was Antonio Brown before last year. He was the guy that had the bigger upside than Antonio Brown. The injuries has been bugging him a lot. And you would have to, I mean, let's figure Mike Wallace is out of the equation right now. Antonio Brown's going to get a lot of those double teams that Mike Wallace saw. So you're going to have Jericho Cotchery. And I think if Emmanuel Sanders stays healthy, I think he has a chance to really fill this. And be honest with you, I think they're going to use a lot of Chris Rainey and another level. Chris Rainey or Baron Batch, it doesn't matter. I mean, whoever wins that battle. In a role of a sort of a receiver if they need one. I don't think we're going to see a lot of four wide receivers. What I've seen, a lot of the fourth wide receiver has been a running back, a tight end. So I don't think that a fourth receiver is as valuable in this offense as it was in Bruce Arians.
Yeah, and plus Burress, too. There's no way he takes the minimum for a deal anyway, I wouldn't think. He'd be better served just waiting for an injury to wait to happen around the league and get him $1 million there probably. So I'm with you. I don't think that happens there, and I'm with you as well, too. They're going to wait to the last possible minute to make a decision to bring in a veteran like that on top of it, in my opinion there. Emmanuel Sanders seemed to be running okay now. Does he look healthy?
Yeah, he looks fine. The day off the other day was just because they had to move it to the turf field or so. That's what Mike Tomlin said. He's just trying to be, you know, a little bit preventative on that nature. And that says something in itself right there. If you're a third-year guy and you're already worried about his foot, his ankle, or whatever it is. So he needs to stay healthy. I think if he stays healthy, he's going to be maybe not as dynamic as Antonio Brown was last year, but he's going to be darn close. He's a very talented guy, very fast guy. So absolutely, Emmanuel Sanders might be that guy that the Steelers season might rest on, be honest with you. I mean, because I can see, I keep saying this, if Mike Wallace doesn't come in, you want to, people ask why Mike Wallace's numbers were down last year. That's because he was getting double teamed a lot. What do you think is going to happen with Mike Wallace not here? That double team's going somewhere. That'd be pointing right at Antonio Brown, and he's going to be able, he's going to have to find a way to beat it. And that's absolutely obvious.
Absolutely. What about the turn into the cornerback battle? Now, I know we got Keenan Lewis. He sure got his butt back quick with that shoulder injury. You could tell, he's feeling that pressure from behind him from Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown. I don't want to focus on that battle of three as much as I want to focus on the guys for maybe the fourth, or fifth cornerback spot. Terrence Frederick and Carter. Was Carter back working today with that hamstring? And
no, he was out. He was out today.
And well, how's that battle going? Is Frederick showing anything? Who's going to be the fourth? The fifth cornerback on the roster.
Well, it's tough to say right now because it's so early in their limited camps. They're more interested in seeing if Cortez Allen can play the nickel and if Curtis Brown and Keenan Lewis can actually play cornerback right here. So I don't know how concerned they are with the fifth guy right now, but Terrence Frederick, typical young guy. They look good one day, then all of a sudden they disappear for a couple of days, and that's how he was. So that fifth cornerback job will probably come down to the absolute last thing, and it's going to also depend on what they can do on who's the better special teams player, because more than likely that cornerback position is probably going to have to, if he gets dressed on game days, would be able to have to contribute on special teams in some sort. So instead of looking at maybe a fourth cornerback or a fifth cornerback in that situation, maybe we should look at who's the best special teamers who can play cornerback. So that might be more important to the Steelers.
You mentioned, I think, yesterday, Steve McClendon's kind of your camp phenom right now.
And I jinxed him.
Oh, you did? He didn't have a good day?
I jinxed him because Marquise Pouncey kind of handled him a handful of times. It got Steve McClendon quite upset today. But Marquise Pouncey is an all-pro type of center, so that's going to happen. But overall right now, Steve McClendon is just on a different level. He's playing extremely well. Very physical, very big. Like I said, you look at that list of 280 pounds, and that might be like his legs. That might not encompass his top half of his body. So he's 330, 335, and he's a pound. And I was talking to Casey Hampton the other day, and he said that boy's a real man. And Casey, I even asked him about coming back, and he said knowing to have somebody who's a pro like Steve McClendon there is going to have a year he has, he's afforded to make sure he's 100% healthy before he gets back, too. So that should help him. I mean, you know who filling in behind McClendon, Cade West, and he's looking decent at times. And I guess the absolute part of this camp, what you think about is now, like, all these players, all these young guys have just been so inconsistent. I guess that's how you would have to describe it right now.
Talking about fullback, Will Johnson versus David Johnson. This thing goes back and forth, and then David Johnson goes and gets his butt kicked yesterday by Lamar Woodley. I think you even reported that three straight times on that. But this Will Johnson kid won't go away. I think Ken Laird mentioned something about him today as well, too. Is there a good chance that Will Johnson upsets David Johnson, or is there a good chance that we could see them somehow squeeze both of these guys onto the 53 if per se they don't keep someone like a Paulson or somebody like that as a third tight end?
Well, Dave, you're the cap guru, and you know when money's involved here that if they do get rid of David Johnson, they're saving some money here. So that could be the deciding factor when it's all said and done, because David Johnson, I believe, owed 1.26 if he makes this roster, and Will Johnson's minimum?
Yep.
League minimum. That's a nice chunk of change to have in your back pocket for a guy who can do the same thing. But for David Johnson, when he got whipped, that's when they moved him back to tight end. And the reason why he didn't play tight end a lot, blocking tight end a lot last year, because he can't block linebackers. When you put him in the backfield as a fullback, he turns into a different guy. He looked tremendous today blocking out of the backfield as a fullback. Put him in tight end blocking, he gets destroyed. It's just something with him that he's a better fullback type of blocker. And Will Johnson is just a beast right now. He's really looking good. He's really sticking his nose in there. And that definitely have to be a battle. But you would think that if money's not involved here, you would think Will Johnson would have to do something crazy to win this job, just for the fact that you always have David Johnson as a third tight end possibility or a fourth tight end possibility. If you only want to keep two, three tight ends, you always have David Johnson there in the case of emergency. And they always look at things like that, too. So I think Will Johnson is going to have to thoroughly beat David Johnson for David Johnson to be cut.
I'm going to wrap you up with a linebacker question here. We've seen, of course, Woodley was off today. Sylvester, last couple of days, I think, working at left outside linebacker. Now, Sylvester did get some work, very minimal, his rookie season in mop-up games at left outside linebacker, but I don't know how much you can read into that other than just helping with his position flexibility. Are you reading them working Sylvester outside as maybe an indication that this guy is indeed on the bubble here, or do you think this is just a mere a thing to just work on position flexibility here?
I'll tell you what Keith Butler told me when I asked him that today. Basically, what he said is they are extremely worried about their outside linebacker depth. He does not want, on any scenario, to move Lawrence Timmons outside this year. He had to last year, and he will again this year if they can't find somebody who can play as well as Lawrence Timmons out there. He doesn't want to move him out there. So if Stevens and Sylvester is an option out there, that is, so be it. I mean, Chris Carter is also an option. Worlds is an option. But these guys are really haven't done a lot, really haven't proven a lot. So they want to move those guys all around. If you notice, Brandon Johnson was inside. They're flipping Sean Spence from Mac to Buck and back and forth like that. They even have Morty Ivey on that side. They want all these guys to be position flexible to go after Mike Tomlin. So when somebody's called on needed during the game, they're comfortable to put him out there because, like I said, I mean, Keith Butler will tell you like it is. And he, like I said, he does not want Lawrence Timmons on the outside at all this year. But the only way to do that is to make sure Stevenson Sylvester, Chris Carter, and Jason Worlds can hold that position down. Chris Carter, I mean, Stevenson Sylvester is a big boy. He's bigger than Chris Carter. That's the point of attack to be able to set that edge. So They're just throwing it out there. See if he can do it. I mean, it's hard to tell right now because there's not any game action. He always looked like to me a more of an outside guy, Sylvester, than an inside guy. But I also asked about Larry Foote, and he's absolutely solidified him as the inside guy. So don't even worry about that. I mean, there was some talk about people saying Foote might not make the team. Foote might not be Foote's your starting inside linebacker, and they want Timmons right next to him, and hopefully, I mean, have Woodley and Harrison there on the outside, but we didn't see that much last year, and we haven't seen it all this year so far. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I said a lot there and probably was babbling a little.
No, that definitely makes sense. And David Todd, too, talked to Keith Butler, and Butler still seems to think that James Harrison and James Worlds are a couple weeks away from even starting to practice yet. So.
Absolutely. I asked him if James Harrison can come, you know, the week of week one and get ready to play, and he's like, absolutely not. He wants him to be ready to play in that week three preseason game against Buffalo. He told me that. He said he really needs reps. He has all the mental reps you could possibly have, but absolutely James Harrison needs reps. He's going to need to be ready for that week three Buffalo game, because that's how much is he going to play in that week four Carolina game? Probably not a lot. But so if you go by that, thinking Harrison will be on pop probably until after the Colts game, and maybe you'll have a week of practice, then play in Buffalo. That's what it looks like right now.
And I'm with you, too. Earlier in the interview, you said this outside linebacker position is the biggest concern. I'm with you. I'm not worried about the defensive line. I'm not worried about the secondary at all. I'm worried about the depth of outside linebacker, because if you don't have a healthy James Harrison and Lamar Woodley out there, it's going to be brutal. You know,
that's funny you should say that, because in the Tribune Review on Saturday, I'll break it down for you, Bob. The dominance of Woodley and Harrison compared to when they weren't in the game together last year. So,
well, that
definitely needed. It just presents a different obstacle for opposing teams when both of those guys are in the game.
Well, that's a great teaser. Then that's a great way for us to end it. Then make sure you read Mark Cabali's work. You said the Sunday issue of the Tribune Review. So be looking for that. Mark, as usual, brother, man, I certainly do appreciate you joining us. You do fantastic work on Twitter as well, too. So, you know, read Mark's stuff at the Trib. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Cabali_Trib. He's also got the blog going on the Tribune Review site as well, too. So, Mark, I appreciate your time on a Wednesday evening, and thanks for joining me again on Terrible Podcast.
Yeah, Dave, I'll try to get that Ben Roethlisberger video on YouTube anytime soon, so you can check that out too. So
I'll get that out to everybody. And Mark, you don't know how much you know, I love having you on the show, so I appreciate it.
All right, Dave, take it easy.